you got it dialed in. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Originating from Dallas, Texas, and recorded live. So good to be with you again as we explore an exciting world, the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. In this program today, we're going to visit with Victor Saperstein, and he is a co-founder of a company called Lambda Solutions. Lambda Solutions uses the Raman method in spectroscopy. Now, no, I don't mean ramen noodles. No. No, Raman is an important thing. The guy that developed it, named Raman, won the Nobel Prize. And anyway, Victor Saperstein is going to explain all that to us in just a little bit. Nanotechnology and alternative energy is today's topic. And we're going to visit the Dennis Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody that a lot of us never heard of. Today, particularly someone we haven't heard of, Anonymous. And we're going to visit our Fountain of Useless Information, or as the fountain calls himself, Youth, Fountain of Youthless Information. That's right here on the set in the second half of the program. And we're going to ask the spirit of the fountain the question of what animal in World War II was the most highly decorated. And I think I know the answer to that, and I bet you do too. Anyway, I'm going to stick around to the second half of the show, and the fountain is going to tell us what is the real answer. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But before we get to today's guest, I want to look in the newsroom here real quick and see what the latest is going on. You remember that the European Union plans for raising the EU's greenhouse gas reduction goal from 20% to 30% by 2020? Well, it says here that France and Germany have joined a growing rank of other European countries opposed to making further unilateral moves on climate change. You don't know where has a shift in public opinion been more striking than in Britain. Climate change was, until this last year, a real popular priority. You know, remember back in 2008, Parliament enshrined targets for emission cuts as national law. But since then, the country has evolved into a home base for a thriving group of climate skeptics. So anyway, I'm sure we'll be updated on this as time goes by. Right now, though, I understand we're ready to go on the line and talk to Victor Saperstein.
Stand by.
Okay, now we get to our today's guest, and as always, you know, we really like to talk about energy on this program a great deal, and whenever we can, whatever we're speaking about, we want to see how nanotechnology influences it and kind of works into it. Well, today we're going to talk about nanotechnology and spectroscopy. No, don't run away. It's got to be simple if I have anything to do with it, so we're going to keep this down to terms and ideas and things that we all can understand. And we have with us back an old friend. You might remember Victor from a couple of years ago with Lambda Solutions. He was on this program, and he's been doing a lot of exciting things with his organization, and we wanted to bring him back. Victor, where did we reach you today?
Oh, I'm working from our New York office in Pound Ridge, New York.
All right, that's great. Now, I understand that Lambda Solutions has been doing a lot of things in the energy sector, nanotechnology, and working closely with Israel. You've been traveling back and forth a great deal there. Can you tell us anything about it, or is it all top secret?
Well, some of it is, I wouldn't call top secret, proprietary. Let me just say that you and I have had some discussions recently. I've been very excited about some of the press releases that you've had, mm-hmm. and it sort of prompted both of us to reconnect. The what we've been working on with an Israeli group as well as other groups is the use of spectroscopy to monitor the, or help monitor the production of silicon-based films used in photovoltaic energy.
Mm-hmm.
The photovoltaic films are essentially the solar electricity generator as opposed to thermal films.
Mm-hmm.
And photovoltaic films are fairly complex, multi-layer devices that hold a great deal of promise for higher efficiency solar capture or solar generated energy. Problems have been, as they are in all nano and micro devices, the ability to monitor the quality of the materials. And that's really where spectroscopy comes in. And let me just give a little pitch for spectroscopy. And again, I agree with you, Colonel. There's no reason for people to flee. Spectroscopy really is just the way light interacts with matter. Whether it be absorbed by the matter or reflected or scattered, that process by of that interaction, when properly monitored, allows one to gain an enormous amount of information about the composition of the material. And because you're dealing with light, this can potentially be done very, very rapidly. And that, of course, is very important in maintaining the efficiency of production, to be able to get rapid feedback on the quality of the materials. And obviously, as we move from the micro down through the nano scale, the quality control of those materials becomes even more crucial. So we have concentrated on one type of spectroscopic measurement. It's called Raman spectroscopy,
mm-hmm.
Named after an Indian physicist, Raman, who developed this. Actually, I think his publication was in 1928. It was such an astounding advance. He was given the Nobel Prize in 1929,
mm-hmm.
which is almost unheard of to get it quite so quickly. We have been concentrating on, in this area, in the monitoring of silicon-based materials as well as carbon-based materials. And I know that you have had programs in the past about carbon, and I hope we can elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I hope you do, because carbon, of course, it was the very essence of the first discovery of the buckyball in nanotechnology. So, yeah, please do.
Yeah, well, let me just use as a point of departure what you mentioned in terms of what we're doing with actually both groups in Israel, Taiwan, as well as South America.
Mm-hmm.
We have been using Raman, a Raman-based device, and taking advantage of the fact that we've developed some very high throughput optics based upon fiber coupling of our optical samplers, which essentially are optical devices that channel the laser to illuminate the sample and pick up the signal. The coupling from those fibers, and we use a proprietary fiber array, the coupling of that array to what is called the spectrometer, which is where the reading of the signal is done. I'm happy to say we recently received a patent for that, and it gives an extraordinarily high efficiency coupling. That's very, very important in this whole area, because graphene, graphite, carbon nanotubes, silicon, whether it be crystalline silicon or different amorphous forms of silicon, as important as they are, they actually have very weak signals. And the and when they're not extremely weak, such as with graphene and carbon nanotubes, you are very limited in the amount of light that you can bombard these materials with, because they'll burn. You try hitting a laser with a laser on a carbon nanotube above a fairly low power, and it just is becomes incendiary.
Oh, jeez.
So what's limited? So the ability to capture weak signals becomes very important. Also, the ability to tailor the instrumentation, whether it be the wavelength of the lasers used and the types of detectors, is very important because the having a flexible configuration allows you to optimize the resolution. What I mean by resolution is, I'm sure everybody sort of knows what, when I refer to a spectrum, it's a bunch of peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
The distance between those peaks, or the ability to distinguish one peak from the next, is what we call resolution. That becomes very important. So we have been focusing on developing those kinds of spectroscopic tools, and I think the area has really exploded. I know that you recently had a press release on, which I thought was extremely exciting, that was developed actually down in Texas, using, I believe, carbon nanotubes, multi-walled carbon nanotubes, as a means of using heat gradients to generate electricity.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the program we did with Dr. Ray Bachman with the University of Texas Nanotech Institute, the Alan G. McDermott Nanotech Institute there. And he and his group have developed sensors that actually electrodes that are nanotechnology based that generate electricity from heat. And that was a fascinating program that we did a few weeks ago. So, yes, I think that's what you're referring to, isn't it?
Yes, and it's very exciting. Let me just tell you a little bit, if you don't mind. I know that I've been introduced to your listeners before, but my main colleague, who was unable to join us today, Dr. Yang-Wu Yang, mm-hmm. I just want to tell you a little bit about his background and some of his contributions.
Okay.
He actually was the designer of the recently patented fiber coupling system, and he's also our main optical designer.
All right.
Yang-Wu actually comes from Hubei province in China and received his master's at the Chinese Academy of Science in Beijing, and then his PhD at MIT in the chemistry department and spectroscopy group. Luckily for the U.S., he chose to stay here,
mm-hmm.
And start a family. And so Lambda Solutions and the rest of us have reaped those benefits. Yang-Wu and I actually were the founders of Lambda Solutions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so he's been very involved with me in developing both the silicon and the carbon area.
All right.
I think I don't know how familiar your audience is on the really exciting areas now with carbon. It's worth reviewing, though.
Yeah, would you please review it for us? We'd like to bring us up to date.
Yeah. Carbon nanotubes has actually been around, been working with them for about at least 10, 15 years, but only recently have the research tools such as Raman become more accessible and available, and that really has enabled the commercial use of carbon nanotubes to really take off. They have very exciting properties. They are exactly as they sound. They are carbon-based tubes. And what they're like are almost those buckyballs, but extended as if they were cigars.
Mm-hmm.
And they are one atom thick. And they are made up of carbon atoms arrayed essentially in hexagons and pentagons. And this meshwork can twist and turn. And that twisting and turning actually imparts very interesting properties, both the tensile strength of the nanotubes, and therefore they can be used to change the strength of the materials with which they are mixed or used even in a pure form. They can, when they twist certain ways, it's called chirality. The nanotubes actually become very, very good conductors of electricity, mm-hmm. as well as thermal conductors. Carbon nanotubes come in two basic flavors, what's called a single-walled carbon nanotubes, which are mostly used in the electronics area, and multi-walled carbon nanotubes that can be used more in the thermal area. But there's a lot of crossover.
Well, which ones are used in the materials that make bulletproof vests and that sort of thing?
Single-walled carbon nanotubes. In fact, it's become a mainstay in that area. It's the thermal and electrical properties of carbon, which is really revolutionizing the materials sciences.
Now, what about the source for carbon nanotubes? At one time, they were pretty rare, but I understand there's more of them on the market all the time. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you ever do a Google search, you'll find there are an endless number of suppliers. That, of course, is going to change as that market shakes out and there's consolidation. And some of the big companies are getting more involved in that. Also, as the market becomes more defined and some of the uses are more defined, you know, there will be very more defined supply chains. But I think that the way the story goes is that a curious researcher happened to be looking at the structure of soot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that black stuff that comes out of the chimney.
Yeah.
And when they looked carefully under the electron microscope, much to their surprise, they found ordered structures.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from just the combustion of carbonaceous material. After a lot of trial and error, it was discovered that you could sort of make those things form on purpose. And so and to this day, controlled forms of combustion are the major sources, major ways of making carbon nanotubes. And some of the more experimental and innovative procedures use different types of material for the combustion and different types of additives that are added to essentially act as catalysts for the formation of particular types of carbon nanotubes.
Yeah, you were mentioning soot, and it was funny that Dr. Robert Curl back a few years ago said that when they discovered the buckyball, because they were dealing in graphite and everything, all the soot people says, well, we've been studying soot for years and years and years. But my question is then, if there's such an overabundance of carbon nanotubes, will the price come down? Because when I last held a handful of them, I was told that it was worth about $2,500 for about that amount, which precludes a lot of the use that we'd like to use them for, doesn't it?
Well, yes and no. There are a lot of people making them. That doesn't mean that the tonnage is so great. Mm-hmm. There just are a lot of producers. They are not that difficult to make. The price certainly is going to come down. I think what you're finding is there's been a lot of effort made to find better uses for multi-walled carbon nanotubes. Multi-walled carbon nanotubes at one point were just nanotubes that weren't single-walled carbon nanotubes. Mm-hmm. Now they themselves are better defined. And so they are simpler to make, a little bit harder to analyze, because their spectroscopic profile is not as clearly defined. But that's where more sensitive instrumentation, higher resolution instrumentation becomes very important. But they can be made in much higher volumes. And so when that previous guest of yours was talking about, you know, lining essentially heat pipes and using that as an electricity source,
mm-hmm.
Which of course is very exciting. It means that you can do a lot of cogeneration. That plants that are generating heat as a byproduct of their process can now utilize that heat to essentially drive their manufacturing process by recycling it, excuse me, in the form of electricity. So I think that price is going down. People are finding better and better ways in which to make composites so that you don't need to use pure carbon nanotubes. You can essentially dope materials with carbon nanotubes.
Okay.
And more people are finding ways of using graphite and graphene, which is a form of graphite.
Yeah, can you explain the difference there between graphite and graphene? I haven't heard of graphene.
Graphene is a very specific structure of graphite. It's similar to some extent to carbon nanotubes in that it looks a little like chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than be tubes, they tend to be in a sheet-like form. It's not amorphous like many forms of graphite are. Graphene, however, is a very exciting area, and it's another area that it's another type of material that really can only be analyzed by Raman. And actually Raman microscopy, because what people are interested in are very small, almost flake-like pieces of graphene. If your listeners are interested, I just refer them to doing a Google search on graphene resistors. And just in the last 3 or 4 months, there has been an outpouring of new reports on very high speed, gigahertz speeds of using graphene resistors. But that's going to revolutionize both communications and I don't even want to say microelectronics, nanoelectronics. And we actually are moving from the world of silicon to the world of carbon.
And that's because, not because we're running out of silicon, but because it's the surface, so we can't work on smaller areas, I understand, with silicon than we can with carbon. Is that right?
We can work with smaller, with carbon.
Yeah.
Okay, and actually we can generate higher speeds of transmission.
Okay, I hear our cue. We're going to have to take a quick break here for just a bit, and then we want to come back and explore that thought a little further. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Anonymous. Two ends we have with a common link. With one we sit, the other we think. Success depends on the one we use. Heads we win, tails we lose. Anonymous.